Prostate cancer is the second most common cancer in men and the second most fatal. Our next guest was diagnosed with prostate cancer, had surgery, and then decided it was time to address the issue head-on, answer questions, and give other men advice for how to weather cancer without losing our senses of humor. Jack McCallum is a sports writer and journalist and the author of The Prostate Monologues, What Every Man Can Learn from My Humbling, Confusing, and Sometimes Comical Battle with Prostate Cancer. Jack, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Sometimes comical. Now, the word cancer and comical don't usually appear side by side. Why is it important to keep a sense of humor about this?
Well, I think prostate's one of those diseases that, first of all, it's, you know, invariably mispronounced as prostrate.
Yeah.
Somebody always has prostate cancer. It involves the ramifications of treatment, involve sometimes incontinence, which is a whole other, you know, sense of humor, shopping for pads. It involves a great majority of times, erectile dysfunction. That's always a, you know, great source of humor. And the only thing I thought that I could bring to this, I'm not a medical doctor. I thought just approaching it from the standpoint of kind of the lighter side of it while reminding everybody, yes, as you said with your statistics, this is a very serious illness, but it is one that can be dealt with, I think, with a sense of humor.
Well, for those reasons you just mentioned, do you get a sense that we as a society and men as individuals are kind of squeamish about talking about it in the first place?
I think that's probably true, although what I found is that, I guess, and I'd say fortunately to this, as men age, and it is a disease that comes upon you when you're a little bit older, as men age, my experience was they are much more willing to talk about it, because I think what happens anyway is when we get to the age of 50 or 55, half of men's conversations will be how many times they get up to pee during the night. And that becomes sort of like the jokey intro kind of to prostate cancer, which is, by the way, not necessarily a symptom, although it can be. So I think men, as they get into their 50s, get into their 60s, are probably more willing to address things like incontinence and erectile dysfunction, which, God knows, I would not have been addressing them when I was in my mid-30s, I can tell you that.
Well, let's hear your story. How did you find out you had prostate cancer? What was the process?
Well, I think one of the reasons I felt that I could write the book was I was an incredibly typical case. I was 62 years old, typical age to find out. I found out with a rising PSA from a standard test that my primary care physician ordered. My PSA was 3.8, which is not amazingly high. However, it had grown exponentially from my previous test, so there was a velocity factor, which is what they call. He suggested getting a prostate biopsy, which brings understandable terror to a man. But nevertheless, I did it. I did it kind of seamlessly. I actually went to sleep. And when I was done, I just had the feeling that I did not have prostate cancer. It just didn't. I didn't have symptoms. The doctor told me during the biopsy that my prostate, from all he could see, was, quote, normal. Not that you usually see cancer, but mine did not seem enlarged. But when the biopsy came back, I in fact had a measurable amount of cancer, and once again I was the typical case. I had the amount of cancer, which, you know, you could have a debate on whether or not it had to be treated, or whether or not it could be, the recommendation would be something called active surveillance, which is watching the cancer, monitoring, taking PSAs, getting another biopsy once a year, to see how fast it's growing, because along with being a very fatal cancer in a large number of cases, prostate cancer is also the kind of cancer that many, many, many men survive. And in fact, the statistics say that everybody biopsied above the age of 85 would probably have prostate cancer, but did not necessarily die from it.
And that's one of the weird things about this disease. And a lot of your book is concerned with talking to experts and people who have been through this on that tough decision. Do you aggressively pursue it and get the surgery, or do you actively surveil? What were some of the opinions you heard back and forth there?
Well, that is the essence of prostate cancer. I mean, if you hear you have pancreatic cancer, you have to start planning, you know, the rest of your life, because statistically, you do not have much of a chance of surviving that beyond 18 months. Lung cancer is a very, very, very difficult disease also that kills a lot of men, and percentage-wise, between those who get it and those who die, kills more people than prostate cancer. The adjective that associated with prostate cancer, as you indicated, is perplexing, is confusion. What do I do with it? And I talked to expert after expert after expert, and if I was going to say, if I talked to 30 people, medical experts, doctors, not guys on the street, 15 would say, would look at my cancer and would have said, well, I think you should have done active surveillance. I think you could have watched this thing. I don't think you were going to die from it. You didn't have to risk incontinence and ED. The other 15 would say, you did absolutely the right thing. This needed to be treated. This was not a negligible amount of cancer. No, you were not going to die when you're 63 or 64. You may not have died when you were 75, but how do you know you weren't going to die from it when you were 80 and you were best to get it treated now? So it's the kind of disease that causes a lot of confusion, and there is not a consensus. There's not a clear consensus in cases like mine of what to do, and that is the perplexing thing about it.
And as you mentioned, what you did was you got the surgery. What persuaded you to go that way?
Well, number one, I went to Johns Hopkins and presented myself as the perfect case, I thought, for active surveillance. It was a small amount of cancer. I had done some research. My wife probably did more than I did. That seems to be typical, that as soon as you hear you have cancer, you know, the man will watch a Law and Order rerun, and his wife or girlfriend will begin, you know, Googling things about it. And I went down to Johns Hopkins feeling they would tell me that's kind of the temple of active surveillance. Well, Jack, you're a great candidate for active surveillance. Don't worry about this thing. But I was considered, strangely enough, the younger you are and the in better health you are, the more argument there is for getting treatment, because if there's nothing else wrong with you, the greater likelihood is you are going to die of prostate cancer. And obviously, the younger you are, the more chance you are, the more years you're giving yourself to be overtaken by it. So my first thought was that. Then it just weighed on my mind. I'm not the kind of person to write down my PSA and go every 6 months and turn my life into someone as someone with cancer. Because when you have cancer, it sort of overwhelms everything else. And I just didn't want to be that guy who had cancer. And finally, I got enough opinions that I just thought that robotic surgery, which is, you know, more non-invasive than traditional surgery. It's done laparoscopically. I did some investigation about my surgeons, and I just finally felt comfortable about getting this done, and damn the repercussions.
We're talking to Jack McCallum. He's a sports writer and journalist and the author of The Prostate Monologues, What Every Man Can Learn from My Humbling, Confusing, and Sometimes Comical Battle with Prostate Cancer.
We'll continue this conversation in a minute. Right now, here's a few headlines we're watching with Kristen Dersch from WPR News. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up again with Jack McCallum. He's a sports writer and journalist and the author of The Prostate Monologues. Jack, how do you make sense of whether or not to get screened for prostate cancer? It seems sometimes like it's as big as an argument as to whether or not to get the surgery.
It's a huge argument, and it came along right, you know, after I had gotten diagnosed, that something, a government, I don't want to call it a government task force, because it sort of distances itself from the federal government. My contention is it's about as close to a government statement about prostate cancer as there is. But their recommendation is not even to get screened for prostate cancer. The reason being, according to them, that the ramifications of overtreatment, that is getting treatment when you shouldn't have, therefore, you know, erectile dysfunction, biopsy problems, incontinence problems, problems with surgery, outweigh statistically the benefits of getting treated for prostate cancer. Now, they certainly have. I'm not a medical doctor, and, you know, to summarize this quickly is very difficult. But I can see my concession in that was there is a difference between, you know, getting over-tested and getting over-treated. I think every man should know everything he can about his health. And if I had prostate cancer, I want to know if I had it. Whether or not is I get treated is maybe where the debate comes in, where you should talk to your doctors. You want to look at the statistics about how long you're going to live. You want to look at the numbers across the population. That's fine. You know, you should do that. But I think the idea of not getting screened personally is ridiculous.
Well, we've got a lot of people who want to talk about this. Let's go to Wayne in Milwaukee. Wayne, hi.
Hello.
What do you?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep. What's your story,
yeah,
Wayne?
I'm 75 years old. I had laparoscopic surgery going on 5 years. It'll be 5 years at the end of this year. I was in the hospital for one night, and I walked out the next day and continued my life, except for the running. I couldn't run for a while. I've had a zero PSA reading ever since, and at the end of this year, if I still have a zero PSA reading, I'm sure I will, I'll be able to donate blood that I had been doing for 30 to 35 years, and that was very important to me.
All right, Wayne, thanks a lot for the call. So a happy outcome from surgery there, Jack. Did you hear a lot of stories like that?
I did, and, you know, my story is very similar to Wayne. I was a lot younger, but surgically, they do amazing things with prostate cancer. You know, I had the robotic treatment. I was the same thing as Wayne. I would add you walk out of the hospital with a catheter.
Right.
For 8 days. But, you know, that was it. And part of what I say in the book is that this idea, you know, I felt almost guilty sometimes. I'd go to the grocery store and people would have known I had cancer. And they'd kind of look at me and go, well, how are you, Jack? Are you okay? And they'd kind of look for signs of dissolution from me. You can recover quite well from this surgery. And I'm glad to hear Wayne has. And I certainly have myself.
All right, Wayne, thanks a lot for calling. We'll go now to Will in Madison. Will, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I also am a survivor. I had surgery at age 45. I'm 53 now and probably am in better condition than I was before the surgery. But I'm also calling, I'm a white man, and I became aware through friends that prostate cancer is so much higher. The cancer rate's 25% higher in the African-American community. And with many cancers, that's also the issue for African-American men. So there truly is a major difference, too, in what's going on across race when it comes to prostate cancer that needs to be known and a part of factored into when folks start getting PSA tests and so forth at a younger rate than we white men.
All right.
And I think that's part of this mix, too, that needs to be out there and in the conversation. I'm very grateful for this, and I hope to read the book, The Prostate Monologues, by the way.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call, Will. Jack, is that something you ran across?
Absolutely true. And in fact, the organization that recommends against PSA screening, which is the United States Preventive Services Task Force, the USPSTF, you can Google to get the whole story with it. They actually, in their sort of mediation against PSA screening, they mentioned, you know, one of the number one risk factors is being an African American. So they don't exactly say if you're an African American you should get tested, but it is one of the high risk factors, along, obviously, as the case with many cancers, genetic. You know, if your father had prostate cancer, my sons, hopefully, who are in their mid-30s, will understand that their father had prostate cancer, and therefore they enter a slightly higher risk group. But the caller, Will, is absolutely correct about African Americans.
Thanks a lot, Will. We'll go to Joe now in Prairie du Chien. Joe, hi.
Hi. In 2001, my father and I were both diagnosed with prostate cancer within about a month of each other.
Wow.
I was 47, he was 75, and we both chose to have him taken out. In retrospect, Dad probably shouldn't have. The chemo and radiation just tore him up and, I think, accelerated his demise. But it helped me immensely because I think of just my age and the longevity factor involved. And one aside on, you know, we have numerous PSA tests leading up to surgery. One of them came back, I wasn't pregnant. So,
well, congratulations.
Yes. I wanted to be on Oprah, but no, thank you. So, but I think there's a difference in the age. Mm. I think that's the biggest factor involved in this.
Joe, sorry about your dad. Glad about the outcome of your prostate cancer. Jack, again, different treatment at different ages.
Very important what he said. Very important what he said. Because the recommendation now, and I totally understand that. In fact, the first caller, Wayne, apparently had this treatment when he was 70. The older you get, for the number two reasons. Number one was what Joe said, and that is you do not come out of treatment as well when you're older. And part of the reason I decided to get surgery now was I was only, when I got the surgery, 62, I was in good shape. So the worse you react to radiation and surgery when you get older. And number two is, if you're 75 years old, 78 years old, and you get prostate cancer, according to the level that you get now, you know, you will probably die before you die of prostate cancer. I mean, statistically, I would not have been dead of prostate cancer when I was, let's say, 75, because I got it when I was 62. But I might have been dead of prostate cancer when I'm 82. I mean, none of this is pure science. It's a little bit of guesswork. But the older you get, the more you have to really consider whether or not you are going to get surgery, intervention, radiology, or radiologically or surgically. And that's something to talk over with your doctor. When you get above the age of 70, 75, you're talking seriously that you should think of the consequences of intervention.
Jack, thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks for having me.
That was Jack McCallum. He's a sports writer, a journalist, and he's the author of The Prostate Monologues, What Every Man Can Learn from My Humbling, Confusing, and Sometimes Comical Battle with Prostate Cancer.